Said it's good to see all of you who I see on a regular basis. It's great to see some of you who I haven't seen in a long time. And if I haven't gotten to you yet and I haven't seen you yet, I'm working my way. I started on this side and I'm trying to get over here. So hang around a little bit afterwards. Let us get to say hi. But it's good to see all of you. What's really weird about that is we have absolutely nothing in common with any of you. We're all people, but that's about it. And even some of us would say that I'm not really people because I'm so weird and robotic from time to time. And so people is even generous, right? We're all people, but that's about all we have. If you think about it for just half a second, and actually I'm going to try to get you to think about it for 15 minutes. If you think about it for half a second, the idea that all of you come to this particular place once a week is absolutely bizarre. There's nothing normal about it. We live in this world that's shaped by boundaries. Some of those boundaries are necessary. Families have boundaries. Communities have boundaries. Nations have boundaries. Healthy relationships require boundaries. Boundaries help us to understand who we are, how we relate to one another. But given enough time, boundaries often become something much more than that. They become ways of sorting people. They become ways of deciding who belongs and who does not. We learn to divide the world into categories at a very early age. There are people who are respectable and people who are not. There are people we trust and people we avoid. There are insiders and outsiders. There are people who seem to fit naturally within our circles and people who seem to exist beyond them. And sometimes those divisions are obvious, sometimes they're subtle, yet they shape the way that we move through the world. The challenge is that once we begin seeing people through those categories, it becomes difficult to imagine a different way of belonging. We start to assume that communities are built around shared identities, shared values, shared experiences, shared status. We assume people belong together because they are alike in some meaningful way. And when we encounter someone who falls outside those boundaries, our instinct is often to keep the distance at all cost. And perhaps that's why our world feels increasingly fragmented. We gather into smaller and smaller circles. We seek out people who make sense to us. We build communities around similarity, familiarity. Yet beneath all of that remains a deeper question. How do strangers become family? How do people with little in common become a people who genuinely belong to one another? The word of the Lord from Matthew chapter 9. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax collection station. And he said to him, "Follow me." And he got up. He followed him. And as he sat at dinner in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors, sinners?" But when he heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick do. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And while he was saying these things to them, suddenly a leader came in and knelt before him, saying, "My daughter has just died. But come and lay your hand on her, and she will live." And Jesus got up and followed him with his disciples. And then suddenly, a woman who had been suffering from a flow of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak, for she was saying to herself, "If I only touch his cloak, I'll be made well." And Jesus turned, and seeing her, he said, "Take heart, daughter. Your faith has made you well." And the woman was made well from that moment. And when Jesus came to the leader's house and saw the flute players and the crowd making a commotion, he said, "Go away. this girl is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. When the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl got up. And the report of this spread throughout all of that region. You can pretend as long as you want to. We can sit here all day if you'd like, pretending that anything in this story makes sense, but none of it does. There is nothing normal about any of this. As soon as we enter Matthew's story, the categories begin to collapse. The first person we encounter is Matthew himself, sitting at a tax booth. You ever see somebody sitting in a tax booth and thought, I'll make a friend? When was the last time you walked by the H&R Block store in the mall and said, let's just stop in there and see if anybody's feeling lonely today? People have always avoided the tax booth. Matthew is not merely someone with an unpopular profession, though. He's something so much worse than that. Matthew's a sellout. He's a collaborator with Rome. Matthew benefits from the system that exploits his neighbors. To many faithful Jewish people, Matthew represents the kind of person respectable society should definitely avoid, because he was respectable and then decided to side with Rome over and against his neighbors, and so he is the Benedict Arnold of Benedict Arnolds. Do not associate with Matthew. You see him at his tax booth, you leave him alone. Matthew bothers you. You don't bother Matthew. And Jesus walks by, looks at him, and says, hey, follow me. And that's weird. That, if you just stop right there, this story is weird enough. The weirdest part, though, is that Matthew just gets up and follows him. It's weird enough that he says, follow me. It's even weirder that Matthew does it. And there's no test, there's no interview, there's no, hey, I'm Jesus, nice to meet you, I grew up in Galilee, oh, you too, it's so nice, which school did you go to? There's nothing. There's nothing. There is no water cooler, there is no talk, there is just, hey, follow me. And the weirdest part, it gets weirder, if you're paying really, really close attention, where does Jesus lead Matthew? He takes Matthew back to Matthew's house. Matthew follows Jesus back to his own house for dinner. And this is supposed to be normal. This is not normal. This is not how you make friends in any version of reality. Matthew has earned no second chance. There's just this command. It's not even really an invitation. It's follow me. And then Jesus takes Matthew back to his own house and invites other people. The story grows even more unsettling when Jesus joins Matthew for dinner at Matthew's own house, and soon the table at Jesus' invitation, not Matthew's, is filled with tax collectors and sinners, and at this point, the nerds in the room need to be thinking about The Hobbit and the dinner scene at the beginning of The Hobbit when Gandalf shows up and invites all these other dwarves into the house. This is Matthew's house for dinner. That's what this is. It's absolute chaos. And there are Pharisees there. How did they get there? They were invited too. Jesus tells Matthew to follow him back to his own house, where he has invited Pharisees and tax collectors and sinners all to share a meal together. And everybody gets there, and they look at the address a second time, and they think, is this the right house? The sinners think, why are there Pharisees here? The Pharisees think, why are there sinners here? And Jesus is just serving dinner to everyone. And they don't understand why. Everyone's shocked, and we understand why. This is not how boundaries are supposed to work. This is not how respectable communities maintain themselves. The questions they ask reveal that tension at the heart of the story. Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? And somewhere those sinners are saying, why does your teacher eat with Pharisees? And somewhere they're all saying, why are the tax collectors here? What kind of community is this? And then Matthew introduces a second character. A synagogue leader jumps into the room in hysterics and says his daughter is dead. And everybody starts grieving until the man says, no, I'm here not because she's, I don't want sympathy. I need Jesus to come and make her not dead. So they get up, they go. His daughter has died. This man occupies a very different place in society than Matthew, than the Pharisees, than the sinners. He is a respected, established religious leader. And if Matthew represents the outsider, then this man represents the insider. The insider comes to Matthew's house for help. And both Matthew and this synagogue leader find themselves standing before Jesus, completely confused. And before they can reach the house where this not dead girl is, another interruption occurs, and a woman who has suffered from bleeding for 12 years, which means she has been ignored for 12 years, reaches out, touches his cloak. For 12 years, she has lived with a physical suffering, but also with isolation. Her condition means that she's been living outside the city walls. She has a home somewhere inside the city. She doesn't get to use it. She's homeless and not by choice for 12 years. And she wakes up one day and she's had enough of it. So she goes inside the city where she definitely does not belong to touch Jesus and find him. And she reaches toward Jesus and she's not pushed away. She is restored. When we step back and look at this whole scene, the question becomes absolutely unavoidable. What do any of these people have in common? A tax collector, a synagogue leader, a woman who has lived 12 years on the margins, and everybody else in the crowd. They come from different worlds. They occupy different places in society. They do not belong in the same story. And Jesus gathers them all into one group of people. And the old explanation for belonging no longer works. He looks at this woman who's been bleeding for 12 years, and the first word he says to her is, "Daughter." This woman who has no place has a home with one word. And the deeper surprise of the story is not simply who he welcomes. It's how Jesus moves towards them and forces himself into all of their circles. Notice what Jesus never asks any of them. He never asks Matthew to prove himself before he calls him. He never asks the woman to explain herself before he restores her. He never asks Jairus whether he deserves help before walking with him through his grief. In every one of these encounters, Jesus takes an initiative. He calls people. He stops what he's doing. He notices them. He restores them. Again and again, the movement always begins with Jesus. And that reveals something very profound about the heart of God. The common thread connecting these people is not their worthiness. It is not their status. It's not their money. It's not their faithfulness. It's not even their similarity. It's not even that they're all humans. The common thread between all of these people is Jesus. That's it. That's all they've got. That's the only thing they have in common. That may be the most important discovery in this entire passage. We often assume that communities are formed because people share something in common. But here, in this couple of chaotic verses, we find people who share nothing in common. What holds them together is not something they possess. What holds them together is just the fact that Jesus is there, and he invited them all to the same shindig. And some of them he didn't invite. They invited themselves, but he says, "That's fine. Stick around." Jesus becomes the center around which these very different lives are gathered. Matthew belongs because Jesus calls him. The woman belongs because Jesus sees her. Jairus belongs because Jesus walks with him. The family that emerges in this chapter is not built upon achievement or qualification. It is built upon the mercy of Christ. And that story does not end with Matthew, Jairus, or this woman with no name. What Jesus begins in this chapter becomes the pattern for the church itself. He just keeps collecting people like this. He never stops. They try to stop him, right? They try to crucify him. They thought death, surely death can stop this collector from collecting people. And they put him on the cross and he makes friends. Who does that? Who makes friends while they're being executed? Who has the time? And then he doesn't stay dead and makes more friends and more friends and more friends. And he just keeps collecting more and more people because that is how the Spirit of God works. Throughout this season of the summer, we're going to look at a whole bunch of different stories that show us what it means to be alive in the Spirit. Because one of the primary works of the Spirit in the New Testament is the creation of a people, the gathering of a people, the molding and forming of a people into a thing. The Spirit gathers those whom the world keeps apart. The Spirit reconciles those who are separated by fear, suspicion, difference. The Spirit forms community where community should not naturally exist. And that is exactly what we see happening in Matthew's gospel. A tax collector, a synagogue leader, and a woman who's been bleeding for 12 years on the margins. This is not a bad joke. They find themselves drawn into the same story because they're all drawn toward the same Christ. What holds them together is not what they share with one another. What holds them together is the life of God that's working among them. And there's no stopping that. Believe me, they will try. There's no stopping this gathering. The church has always existed because that same Spirit is still gathering people into the life of Christ. The miracle of the church, capital C or lowercase c, it doesn't matter which one, is not that good people found one another. The miracle of the church is that Christ continues gathering people who would otherwise remain strangers and then teaches them how to become family. There is no reason any of you would ever have gathered in the same room every day of the week for years on end otherwise. There's just, I believe, I could be wrong, and so please let me know, that I've got a couple things in common with some of you, right? Darwin makes brisket, I make brisket. Darwin makes it better than me, and I'm trying to catch up. We have that. Would we gather here once a week to do that? No, never. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one in the room that makes cowboy hats. It's fine. I don't want you to join the group because then that's competition. Don't do it. But none of you are here to learn how to make cowboy hats. We have nothing in common. And somehow we have everything in common. And that is the miracle of miracles. We have different backgrounds, different experiences, different perspectives, different stories. But through the work of the Holy Spirit, all those differences become one body, with one baptism, with one faith, with one God, with one Savior. That does not mean our differences disappear. Matthew is still Matthew, and Jairus is still Jairus, and the woman remains the woman. The point is not the sameness. The point is the communion of their differences. What binds them together is their shared life in Christ. And that creates a vision that challenges us. It asks us to reconsider the boundaries that we assume are permanent. It invites us to imagine a belonging that is deeper than agreement, stronger than similarity. It calls us to trust that Christ is still gathering people that we would never in a million years think of gathering ourselves. The church becomes most fully itself when it just gives up trying to resist that and says, sure, why not? Let's just fall into Matthew's house for dinner, see what happens. Which leads us to this table week after week. Every week we participate in an act that makes no sense according to the logic of the world. We gather people who would not naturally, normally gather together. We come from different histories, different struggles, different hopes, different fears, and Christ invites us to the same meal together. None of us arrives because we've earned a seat. None of us arrives because we finally became worthy. And none of us arrive because we fit perfectly. We arrive because Christ made room at the table. That is the good news at the heart of Matthew's story. Before Matthew knows how to belong, Jesus calls him. Before this woman knows what restoration looks like, he sees her and calls her daughter. Before Jairus knows how the story will end, Jesus walks with him. Again and again, Christ is creating belonging before people even know how to belong. And as Christ gathers us here once more, the Spirit continues doing what the Spirit has always done, forming a bunch of strangers into the weirdest family you've ever seen. Let's stand and sing.
Amazing.